Hello and welcome to the July episode of the Historics Auctioneers podcast. I am Vicky Butler-Henderson. To my left is YouTuber Tom Exton. And to my right, which makes you my right-hand man,
yeah,
Matthew Priddy, auction expert.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Now then, I am very proud, thanks to Historics, to be able to wear an auctioneer's badge. So I get up on auction day and bang the gavel and sell some cars. There are some proper grown-up auctioneers as well, but I am an auctioneer. And part of the job that I love is that being involved in the whole experience of sort of handing over a car from one owner to its new owner and all of that excitement. What do you love about your job?
I guess I kind of just get to mess around with cars for a living. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. So to me, there's no better job than that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
So. And then filming for the YouTube channel. So filming and seeing yourself on TV, is that something that you...
Shouting at my hand whilst vlogging, not my favourite bit, but working with delightful people like yourselves. Seeing some amazing bits of metal. I know, flattery will get me everywhere,
yeah,
won't it?
Yeah.
No, it's a dream job. I've done every job under the sun and it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah.
So I love it.
It's lovely, isn't it, as well, to be able to have something different every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Every day is completely different.
Yeah.
No office, great.
Very lucky.
Very different from when we were here last, only a couple of weeks ago, and it was raining, of course. And today,
yes,
we're at 30 degree heat,
yeah,
sat next to the water, so
yeah,
a bit different.
We are still, though, under the Heathrow flypass, so it could get a little bit noisy here in Windsor. What do you love about your job?
It's similar to yourself, really. My most rewarding moments usually are selling for people that it's more selling that's more rewarding, I think. The buyer, it's nice to have something bought that someone's going to love and they really enjoy it, but the selling is... It gives you the warm, fuzzy feeling sometimes, especially when it's done particularly well at auction. Strangely as well, some of the most sort of tragic circumstances bring about some of the most lovely feelings when you're selling. So, you know, we're bereavements and someone's selling their car. But what a lovely way then to actually sell a car to someone new, to sort of give it that crescendo, that send-off for someone that's really,
yeah,
really loved the car. So, yeah, that's usually the sort of most rewarding part of the job. And a bit like yourself, you know, getting to drive other people's cars means I don't have to own them myself. So that's always a big win. You know, what cars have you driven? Well, I can, you know, I've run out of what I have driven. What have I owned? No, very little.
I'm so in that gang
as well. It is true, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm moving towards that. I've realised that's the sensible approach. Stop owning them yourself. Just drive other people's.
Right, topics up for discussion in this pod are £100,000 cars that could be had for £30,000. Our first motorsport events and how it has shaped our careers, or not. and we catch up on what we've all been up to recently, and we play a fun game of... Would you rather?
Sounds dangerous.
All will be revealed. So, first of all, we will have a look now at our number one story, which is £100,000 cars for £30,000, because we are ahead of the auction, but you'll be listening to us after the auction,
yeah,
in July. And we have got a variety of £100,000 cars that
we're surrounded by them, aren't we?
Yeah, loads of them. I'm going to just run through a few. We've got a 2005 Aston Martin DB9, 6-litre V12, for an estimate between £28,000 and £34,000.
Wow.
A 2007 Porsche 911 997 Carrera 2S for between £29,000 and £34,000.
Yep.
And then a Bentley Continental GT from 2004. That's got a whopping 6 litre, 600 brake horsepower, W12 engine, and its estimate is between £15,000 and £20,000.
What?
I know. Confession time, Tom, you own a... what once was a sort of high-end, almost £100,000 car.
Almost, nearly there.
did you pay that much for it?
I didn't. I own a 996 Carrera 4S from 2002, and I paid £24,000 for it.
So exactly on that button then, isn't it? Yeah, it's
yeah,
similar thing. Very expensive sports cars from new, but really affordable.
And
at this
actually,
level.
Also, the bills are not that scary on those. Those sorts of cars now, they've got so many specialists that now know every trick, every nook, every cranny, every replacement part. There's people making replacement parts, non-OEM, all sorts of stuff for them. They're not that scary anymore.
But
I've had very little trouble with it. No trouble.
That's the key in itself, isn't it? It's all of those cars we listed have got different sort of, I'd say, levels of specialists available.
Yeah.
Porsche have always got it licked because
yeah,
there were so many more Porsche and that many more people working on them in a specialist nature. So probably... out of the most affordable in maintenance point
of view.
Yeah,
they're least scary, and they just don't really break Porsches.
Yeah.
I mean,
and then ultimately the cheapest of lot, which is incredible, with the Continental GTs, which are epic amounts.
Yeah.
£20,000 for a car like that.
A 202 mile an hour machine.
But probably the most expensive on maintenance, although I know of a few now that as they drop into that sort of the age group, they're starting then to just become more affordable to look after. But, and we said this just before we started, the key is you are buying, you know, a £100,000 car. You've got to sort of expect that it still has to be maintained as if it was a new £100,000 car. And with more modern cars being a bit more electric, you know, a bit more buttons and gizmos and so on and so forth, you've got to be cautious.
Yeah.
You've got to look at, do your research, really. A well-cared example is a great example. Otherwise, you're into almost restoration stakes.
So, Tom, when you bought your Porsche, what were the things that you looked for, or did you just open your chequebook?
I strolled in, eyes closed, walked in backwards, loose belt, and I said, go for it. No, I actually knew the previous owner. I knew of the previous owner, so I kind of had some faith that they were a car person and they were, you know, sympathetic and, you know, they actually knew what they were doing with it. So, and I kind of bought the dealer a bit as well. I got it from a great place. Yeah. So
I've bought cars personally, and I've bought the owner, if that makes sense. I've gone to see the car, and the owner has said, you know, I'll pay what he's asking because I know that he's looked after the car. Or I get the feeling, the sense that he's owned the car. But that's also, again, same thing. I get that sort of thing. I'd rather low owners. But it's interesting because ultimately it's all about checking through that process. When we talk to people here at auctions, it's always the case. Go through the history file, make sure you're happy with it, because once you've bought it, we can't moan about it afterwards. You've got to do all of that first. Check that you think you're happy with the service intervals, what's been done, have they skipped anything.
So when somebody buys the car from auction, they obviously can't gauge the owner who's selling
you
it.
Can always...
So what are the three simple steps that somebody can do when they come here to make sure that they get peace of mind?
So Historics, which I'm pretty certain is similar to anywhere you purchase a car, we'll do a quick HPI check on any car. So you have the HPI check, so you know the number of owners. That should match with the amount of owners in your service books. It should go through all of who's service it. You can check those garages, of course, because they are genuine garages. Oh, we've got
a friend here. Hello, woofer.
Get in.
Get in. We get the skyrocket all the views. you check through your history file and you have a look at those garages and just make sure that those garages are genuine specialists, because some people will just write specialists and actually look up and then just an MOT station, which is fine for an oil change, maybe, but not what you really want to see. So you can go through that. You can always check owners, as you say. If an owner's only owned it for 3 months, that's not a good sign. I mean, you may have flipped it, but it's not a great sign. If someone's owned it for 3 years and another person for 3 years, you've got a good term of ownership, I think, then they legitimately would have looked after that car. So, but again, I think everyone thinks differently, but that's how I think when I look at cars. It's how long has someone looked after it? How well have they looked after it?
One of my current cars, and I'm not going to say which one it is. It's not the Carrera GT because I don't want to destroy the value on that one. But one of my cars, two of the previous owners, I actually Googled them. You can do that. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Great tool, Google. Two of them been to prison, so.
But also, whenever you look at things,
I don't know where I'm going with that. That's just factually what. Yeah.
He always wondered if that was a doctor or a solicitor. It must have been a good owner. I know a lot of doctors that drive like hooligans, so actually, not such the case.
Fraudsters.
So out of those cars that we've mentioned here, so if you had the choice between a DB9, Continental GT, maybe even an SL55 or a 997. Where would you be putting your money, Tom? Come on, you've got experience with this. Would you go with Porsche again? Would you be seduced by the V12s?
I am incredibly dull when it comes to my car choices these days, and I would just go for a 997.
Yeah.
But I do have a friend that comes in and out of Bentley Continental GTs of that age. I was actually with him on the weekend, and he's had next to no issues with them. Yeah. He comes in and comes out, though. I think he kind of sees it, I don't know, he'll just drive it for a bit and then sell it on. He actually makes money on them as well. There is a real kind of cult following for these cars. Mm-hmm. He makes sure he buys clean ones, but he's had no horror stories on those Bentley Continental GTs, so he is kind of swaying me towards them.
You only ever hear horror stories. You don't hear, oh, I've had it with no problems. Very rarely do someone come along and say, I've owned it for 6 years, not an issue at all.
Always the way, isn't it? Yeah. With news, bad news sells newspapers. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's the
same. I think if you really go through them well, I've got a train as well.
I know. Oh, this
planes,
is
trains, automobiles.
Dogs.
Automobiles. We need a boat now just to go past. Yeah.
Well, there's a coot. Is that a coot?
I think that's a moorhen.
There we go. I'll stick to cars.
I mean, I think one of the sensible choices I thought was always the SL55s, but that roof can be a bit problem. But I think it always draws back. If you look through and research your car and you pick a good one, what a lot of cars.
I love those SL55s. I love them. I think they're mega.
And other than infotainment systems...
Yeah.
There's not much giveaway of their age. If you just, you know, it's only if you put an Apple CarPlay in there, which you can retrofit, you could...
Put a private plate on as well, so you disguise your year.
Incredible pieces of kit, aren't they?
Which one would you go for then, the DB9, the 911, or the Continental GT?
I'd love to say the DB9, but you know what? I think I'd go with the 911.
Yeah.
Boring.
But I'd want to use it. I've spoken this podcast before about desperately trying to want to buy one as a daily and then realising every time, no, it's too much for a daily driver. Yeah. But I would want to drive it a lot. And I think if I drove it a lot, the 911 would suit. If I was driving it on weekends and less, I'd probably be seduced into something like maybe a DB9 Volante or something like that.
Yeah.
What about you? Where would you go? Be honest.
I think I'd have to go for the 911.
There we go.
I know. Yeah.
Do you reckon we just order a bit safe, or?
But I dabble with the Continental because I think
I could see you in one of those.
Some long distance cruising with the kids.
If you suddenly had a gig, like you've got to go back and forth to Manchester every week, like, oh, hang on a minute, that's the car.
A nice quilted leather seat.
Massage seats,
of course.
Yeah. And the tech in them, I think you can do the retrofit CarPlay. You can just the software now available for all these. I do it to all mine if I can. Just a little plug-in in the back. Yeah. Great, modern car.
Honestly, Apple CarPlay, if you've never experienced it, it will be a game changer and you won't want to go back. It basically just connects with your phone, and then every app that you've got on your phone and all the music in there and your audiobooks instantly.
It just makes your phone, your phone becomes your car and your car becomes your phone. It's this wonderful world of
And then they can really track you everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're more than welcome to on my side. You see me doing anything interesting, let me know.
Film it. Yeah. On YouTube, quick.
Yeah. I might get some views.
You go around with your name on your number plates most of the time. So
I've got two that I use mainly, and I don't have private plates on them just because I don't want someone sticking a tracker under my car in Sainsbury's car park and then following me home. So that's not a good idea, by the way. Don't do that.
At least you're interesting enough for someone to want to do that. I'd be quite flattered.
Matthew's got Matthew Priddy written all down the side of his car.
If you track me home, I'll invite you in. Have a beer in the garden.
Mobile number on the side of the car. All lot.
Right, let us move on. Now then, we are recording this just a week or so from the Silverstone Formula One Grand Prix, which I went to, which was superb. I actually took my children to their first sort of big motor racing event. First time they watched Formula One, they're 7 and 11, and they absolutely loved it. They've got car fever, racing fever, and the race itself was so amazing that I fear I have set the bar so high. That anything else after that is going to be such a disappointment. But I also remember my first sort of big racing event was at Silverstone as well, and it was in the British Touring Car Championship, where the likes of Andy Rouse was in a Ford Sierra with big flames coming out of the back, and I just loved the smells and the sounds, and just I remember peering up against the wire fence just trying to get a better view. What were your first experiences of a motor racing
event? I think mine was also touring cars. I think it was Thruxton. I think my dad took me, must have been with my brother, and it was at the time when Gabriele Tarquini was driving the Alfa Romeos, and that set me on a path to losing epic amounts of money on Alfa Romeos for the next, decade. It was a couple of years until I passed my test, and then I must have gone through about 8 or 9 Alfa Romeos, and every single one just shelled money out, and it was all because of Gabriele Tarquini and that red Alfa Romeo.
Send him an invoice.
Sure, shouldn't I? But I remember it was the same thing, though. It was the noise, and to this day, it's the noise that gets the hairs standing up on the end. That's what really got me going. Yeah.
This was one thing that I felt that I had slightly robbed my children from, was that experience of the V12 noises that absolutely punctured your chest as the cars drove by. I mean, yes, my children were wearing ear defenders anyway because I want to protect their little ears, but the physical shocks of the V12 wasn't there.
I did Silverstone, one of the practice days on Friday, just before it changed to the hybrid era, which I think was 2014-ish. And I remember sitting in the grandstands, and it was the first time I'd been to a Formula One, and I couldn't get my head around how loud it was, to the point where if you didn't have ear defenders, even an adult, you couldn't spend too much time sat at the front of the grandstand. It was just too loud.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. But every time, and it was a wet day that day, I remember it being a miserable old British day, unlike last weekend, and it was delayed, and then suddenly when one started up in the paddock, everyone just sort of, the anticipation, just the noise. Yeah. It was a long way away, but those engines are unbelievable. Yeah. And that was the biggest shame when it went to hybrid, I think. It's just that immense noise that won't be replicated again.
The next year when it did go to the modern engines, I remember going to Silverstone and turning to somebody mid-race and having a conversation.
Yeah.
Well, that's just bizarre.
Yeah. It's... it had to happen, I suppose. But it is a shame. It's also why we all love with chasing down things like V8,
exactly.
V12s, isn't it? Because it's a, it's a not bygone era now. It's we're not going to be there much longer, are we?
Tom, what about your first motorsport?
I didn't do this stuff as a kid. My parents didn't give a monkeys about motor racing, so they didn't, yeah, I didn't get taken to any of this stuff. But I would say probably Silverstone, maybe. I somehow wangled my way into the little BRDC thing. Had absolutely no business being in there, but I was up there on the kind of watching it sort of prawn sandwich seats, really up there.
And it's continued ever since.
And I just thought, how have I not done this before? It's absolutely bonkers here. And I think F1 has particularly gone completely bonkers the past few years. Mm. The advent of Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, this. I was at Silverstone as well, and it was mayhem. Someone said they oversold it by 27,000 tickets. And I could believe that by the amount of people there. It was havoc.
I know that they had through their gates sort of over 400,000 people, and they were there. That's the official.
Nowadays, but you're right. I mean, the Grand Prix last weekend was the same at the Red Bull Ring, wasn't it? Massively.
Yeah.
It's like going to a huge football tournament or something now. There's so many people that just want to experience it, even on practice days.
But that's what I love about a live event.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the fact that every time Lewis Hamilton went past, we were all on our feet and then sat down again, or we cheered, or,
yeah,
we know, when Lando Norris...
Why is there 70 laps?
I know, exactly. Who started off this? And that... being part of that whole crowd, yeah, and everyone just being so enthralled by a live event. It was fantastic. It really was.
I brought my girlfriend along, and same as with your kids, I had to explain to her at the end. She was shouting by the end of it, cheering, and she had not huge idea what was going on, but she was fully into it by the end. And I had to explain to her, a lot of them are processions, so don't expect it always to be like this. The bar has been set far too high. We're at turn one. Matey's gone past on his roof into a barrier, like in front of us. You know,
That's old 90s chaos. Stuff, is it? It doesn't happen like that anymore.
No.
I remember in the 90s to watch it, and you'd wait for everyone would watch the first lap because it would inevitably always happen.
Yeah.
And nowadays doesn't.
That was actually sickening, to be fair. You know, when it actually happened, you know, everyone was just sort of deathly silent. But I had to explain to her, they're not always like that. So, I think she's coming to maybe Monza with me and Zandvoort.
Oh, you've got them. For somebody who didn't go to motor racing events,
I'm catching up.
You are
quick.
Doing well.
It's not really fair, is it? Really?
I think I'm doing 6 or 7 this year.
Are you?
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to Imola. That's my next one.
I did that. It's good.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's such a cool little town. And then there's just this, basically, Ferrari racetrack sat there. It's so cool. The Italians.
Oh,
I don't
know
if I'd say this, but I think they do it best. It's cool. It's just so cool.
Their country lives and breathes.
Yeah.
It's a national obsession.
Yeah.
Ferrari, isn't it? So it naturally just completely takes over that weekend. Yeah.
It has come to my attention, should I say, that the Andy Rouse Sierra RS500 that I spoke about just now, they are making 3 continuation models of it.
Wow.
Yeah, they are. And guess how much they are each?
Oh, this is
half a
mil, isn't it?
500.
I would say I was probably right about that half a mil.
185 grand.
Bargain!
Yeah, so they're making 3 and they do.
Just get one each.
Oh, yes!
Job done!
And they come with Andy Rouse's blessing as well, and they're sort of being made by one of the team who engineered it.
Is it road legal?
Yes!
Oh, brilliant. No. But like, have you seen here? I think you'll have a look at it later, the Ferrari replica.
The Formula One replica
and it's
car.
Road legal.
It's got a registration plate on its tail.
Oh, my word. Honestly, imagine tipping up to the pub in a full...
Yeah.
You'll have a look at it later. Have a look online.
It's got a Kawasaki engine in it.
I know this will come out after the auction, but you'll be able to see all the details online. Go on to historics.co.uk, have a look at this, and you'll see what it's sold for. It's amazing. And just imagine, just tipping up to the pub. And just, your mates were just jaws.
I want to high five. Whoever's bought that and bidded on that and won it, I want to high five you.
You want to meet them.
That's
quickly, get in contact. Tom wants to come and have
brilliant.
A look and meet you.
Okay, right. This feels the right time to have a little catch up on what we've all been doing. I've explained my Silverstone antics. I was also working, as well as being a wonderful mummy, showing the children the way around. I was also working, and I managed to interview Christian Horner, which was fabulous. And he very kindly remembered that he used to race against me in karts.
Did you beat him?
And he said that I was very quick.
Really?
And I said, so where's my contract? And he said, well, just let's get rid of Perez first. Old Sergio, let's get rid of him and then he can come in. No, that was great. And David Coulthard was wonderful, and he was sort of flying the flag for getting more women involved in all sorts of motorsport, which is always a good thing to do. And Eddie Jordan as well. He was another one whom I interviewed,
course, yes.
who is Stark raving brilliant.
You're quite close. How close are the female drivers to getting on the lineup? Do you think are there some really hot talents that really can get there? I mean, it seems like it's a lot more hard physically than it ever has been in Formula One, which seems odd given that it's so much more driver aid. But I still wait. I want to see a couple of girls on the lineup on the Formula One and really.
There is no muscle or height or any other physical restriction that's
can
stopping
stop them.
Any.
So there's no. Yeah, they've just got to be in.
Yeah. So it absolutely is a numbers game. 50% of girls at the bottom.
There you go, girls.
Worked your way up. Then that's exactly.
More girls
it.
Get into karting, more chance of then getting the girls on the Formula One.
Yeah, exactly. And. Also, there are a couple of girls who raced against the likes of Lando Norris.
Yep.
But by the time Lando Norris got into Formula One, he had done many, many more races. He had many more opportunities. Mm. He'd had. Mm. Whereas the girls of the similar...
Not quite the opportunities.
No, exactly. Not quite the opportunities. There is, of course, the W Series, which is an all-female single-seater racing series, which does go round and support some of the Formula One races, which is great. But...
I want to see him in... Yeah.
I've always raced against boys.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be.
It's like kids now. Our kids play football at a younger age. When they start off, they play, girls and boys play in the same teams.
Yep.
They obviously do eventually move apart.
Yeah.
But as you say, with Formula One, there's no physiological reason they can't.
Car racing and horse racing, girls and boys have always competed. Yep. Men and women always compete against the same. The W Series, it's good because it does catch the girls who would have left it. And if you win, you get £500,000, which could help you get onto the next ladder of the single-seater rung. But the next ladder is Formula 2, and for that you need £3 million, £4 million.
Yeah,
so £500,000 is not going to cut it. So it's, but at least they're making a difference. At least my 11-year-old daughter can look at the races and see,
I mean, it's still tough because ultimately, regardless, I mean, my boys play with cars all day long. They've got a really good friend as a young little girl. She comes down and she just looks at them and says, like, what, are you mad? Why are you playing with cars? It's still going to happen.
I have a sister.
Yeah.
I was the one who was into karting. My sister had a go at it, said, no thanks, not for me. And that was that.
Yeah.
So right there, you've got even two girls, one likes it, one doesn't.
Yeah.
More dads then. More dads to push your girls into motor racing.
More mums pushing your girls. Come on.
Yeah, go on. Get your daughter in a cart. Get her in.
I always say, if you know anyone, daughter, niece, sister, whatever, just say, why don't you come to a local race meeting? Or let's watch it on telly for a few minutes.
It's back to your point, and this comes with any live event. Half of the joy of a live event but it's not necessarily what's happening. It's actually the atmosphere that gets you going. I remember going to old football games when I was a youngster, and I was there just for the atmosphere. I didn't care about the football. We were just there because it was amazing. The same when you go to sort of these big Formula One events, the atmosphere makes the racing. If it was no one there, you just, that would just be practice. You know,
yes.
It'd be the same, would it?
Yeah, exactly. Here.
There you go, more girls in motorsport.
Yay. Right then, on to our last topic. Now then, one of my favourite games at home, giving you a sneak peek as to what goes on in the VH household, is playing a game of Would You Rather. Now, with the kids, it's like, would you rather have fur or scales? So right. I'm going to ask you that now.
Scales.
Ooh, I would have gone fur.
I need fur. I just want to be,
But I hate being too hot.
Okay, cool. Yeah. You're a fur.
There you go.
And the other one, spider or snake?
Snake.
I'd rather be a snake.
Yeah, I think I'd go snake.
I think me too. You get a bit squished.
Snakes are mega. How do they move without legs?
Muscles.
Well, you tell us, you've got the scales.
But it's mad.
I know, isn't it?
So.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We're not here to talk about
that. We're off the track.
So that's what I do with the kids, but with my husband, we play a game of Would You Rather Have X or Y to do with cars, right?
Right, okay.
So
okay,
would
right,
you rather
cars,
have...
Okay, I get this now.
We've kind of spoken about it before, a 911 or a DB9, gut instinct.
911.
Okay. XJS Jag or E-Type Jag?
E-Type.
Hate XJS.
Oh, boys.
Oh, hate them though.
Sorry.
XJS...
Oh, you need Dom on
have
this.
You
need Dom on this podcast.
E-type?
I've driven neither, hence my ignorant reply.
Right.
Oh, yeah. The E-types are cool.
Yeah, but the problem is you have to look at the XJS the whole time as well.
Yeah, it's lovely. What a great shape.
It's a definite era thing. You're a little bit older than me and you like it.
How very dare you?
You know I'm only 21.
It makes me 23.
There's another person off on holiday.
So where are they going to then? Ooh. Sorry about the aeroplanes.
It's a big one, that one.
Yeah, somewhere exotic.
Dubai.
Don't need to here. 30 degrees, lakeside. Wasted money.
Absolutely.
Would you rather have a G-Wagon or a Defender?
You're going to say
G-Wagon. Oh, I've done both.
He's going to say G-Wagon. Watch.
Defenders, I love them, but they're terrible. G-Wagons are less terrible.
Okay. Terrible in what way?
They're just appalling. As a car to actually use and just go down the motorway, a simple task like driving down the motorway.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a Defender, it's just appalling.
And in a G-Wagon, it's just slightly less appalling.
Yeah. You're further towards the median.
A
on
whisker
scale.
Of comfort. See,
yeah. Less wind comes through the door.
What would you go for?
I think I'd have to. It's close call because I could rock a G-Wag, but I'd think at the Defender.
I'd go Defender and never take it on the motorway.
Yeah, I'd stick to the field. Merc SLK or Porsche Boxster?
Boxster all day. I had one. Loved it. 987. 2.7. It was brilliant.
Boxster all day.
Oh, yeah. That's three for the Boxster. MX-5 or Lotus Elise?
Elise. Every time.
Just whatever isn't an MX-5.
Really?
Apparently they're amazing to drive. I haven't driven one actually, so I'm just being rude.
I'll tell you what, we've got one here later on. Take the MX-5 out for a drive.
The
MX-5? Can I wear a disguise or something?
Yeah, no.
No, we'll film it for your YouTube channel.
Balaclava.
Yes, we will film it as well.
I've always said about the Mazda MX-5, if you want to have sort of my first sports car, that is a fantastic car to have because it's not too rigid in its handling and that you've got some, you know, elements of
softness. And the other one's quite analogue as well and quiet.
It is, exactly. Yeah. Brilliant.
Apparently they're amazing
to drive. They're so good. Yeah. But then the next level up, obviously, is the
Boxster. Problem is now you can get a Boxster for the same price as an MX-5.
I know.
That is the big difference now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, we're hijacking your...
Yeah, no, it's good.
Just one-word answers.
No.
That's all
it's
needed.
Yeah. I'm happy to. Happy to.
When she starts looking at the watch, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Subaru Impreza or Mitsubishi Evo?
Oh, I've got a lot of love for the Impreza because it's sort of such a big thing when I grew up. But then I always quite like that the Mitsubishi Evo was a bit more of like the more elusive
Evo
one.
For me.
Yeah, the big Evo.
Sorry, an Evo 4.
Even though we are on, have you noticed?
Subaru Swim.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
Yes. But I would go Evo.
Sod the sign, Evo.
Okay.
What about you?
Oh, I'd have to have a P1.
Tommy
Mackinnon special. Tommy Mackinnon special.
You can't go.
I made the quiz.
Boggo Schnotters. You'd be going for an Evo, but yeah. P1 on.
Your rules.
Lovely.
Fabric roof or hard top folding on a cabriolet?
Oh, do you know, I would always have gone for hard tops a couple of years ago. And now I actually prefer the fabric. Part of it is having a fabric roof. So it's a bit difficult. Something an SL55, I think that's very, very clever, very usable. But then I think, I look at a 911 and I like the fabric roof on the 911. I think it brings something to it.
They always get a bit chafed though, don't they? As soon as you use it once, I had a brand new fabric 992 cab, used it once and there was just folds and chafes in it already, immediately. You could see that it'd been used.
And it maybe not want to use it. Because obviously, when we put them down, you always make sure with the old manual ones fold. It's all very clever. But personally, I like the fabric. I understand it's not as good, but I prefer it.
Metal folding for me. Because in London, you just don't want to come back and someone's used a Stanley knife for no reason. Yeah. Especially the ones with the plastic, fabric back windows. You know, then they have the window on the back that's not even glass. It's just bacon.
You mean anything pre-1990, really? Yeah.
I'm going to go fabric because I think it just adds another layer of intrigue and interest for my eyes to see, and also I like the pitter patter of rain on a fabric.
Yeah, I'm not asking. Yeah. So, do you like, let's say, on a darker colour car or grey car, a red roof?
I had a red roof on my silver 911 with red seats. I am a scumbag, so
I like it. We were having a discussion earlier, and two of the guys said, "Oh, I don't like that." We have a 997 here with a red roof. I really like that. I think it's quite classy. What do you think? Yes or no?
Is it dark grey and dark red?
This one is a black, slightly charcoal black with a dark red.
A deep dark red. Deep dark red. I'll go with that.
Possible. That's okay.
Totes. Yeah.
Okay. That's reaffirmed. I'm allowed to do that.
And then finally, front wheel drive, four wheel drive, or rear wheel drive.
I don't know why, because I'm no driver really, comparatively. But I'd go rear wheel drive.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Just the potential.
Okay. When that talent finally reaches
when I find it, I can use it.
I've gone rear wheel drive on a couple of Hurricanes, and each time I've nearly binned them, so I should probably go for all wheel drive, but rear wheel drive.
On rear wheel drive, it can be on even a lesser car, can't it?
I mean,
once you get Mazda up into MX-5.
Once you get up into the big stuff, granted. you sort of need it, don't you?
They get quite crashy. Yeah. The rear-wheel drive.
But no one's going to go for front-wheel drive as an option, really.
Not around this table. Good. Excellent. Marvellous. Right. Well, that pretty much brings us to the end of this particular podcast. Thank you very much for bearing with us and, of course, the aeroplanes. And now I'm going to hand you over to my very capable assistant, Tom, to talk to you about some social media stuff.
If you like what you've heard, and even if you don't, please go and check us out on Instagram, where all the lots will be previewed on the main Instagram page on Historics, and snippets of our YouTube antics. Speaking of YouTube as well, there is a full video catalogue there with loads of different lots and us talking through our favourite cars as well. So make sure you're subscribed, make sure you're following, and get in the mix with all that lovely stuff. And of course, this podcast is available on all your usual streaming platforms.
And lovely Matthew, when is the next auction?
Next auction and our first auction at Bicester Heritage on the 24th of September. So we'll see you all there, hopefully. We'll have lots of videos online beforehand of us all driving some cars and getting some content and preview. We'll have a podcast, of course, in between. But yes, let's see you there. Bicester Heritage, 24th of September.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for watching. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.